2 of the Nightcap here on VSiN Live from the Circa Studios. That is Jeff Parles, Tim Murray with you, and we'll get to Tony Miller behind the counter here in just a little bit, but let's get you updated on what's happening in the NBA, and right now, Portland and Utah, 47-46, the Blazers with a one-point lead, media timeout there in Salt Lake City, and one of those games where I'm kicking myself. Lots of games still to be played, but this was the one that I think you and I looked a little bit towards the dog here as Portland was catching 5.5 against Utah. And it's been a balanced scoring attack. Dame hasn't gone nuts. He's actually shooting pretty poorly right now. 1 of 6 from three. You mentioned CJ McCollum got off to that hot start. But a 47-46 lead right now for the Blazers over the Jazz, Jeff.
I would be inclined to go with a second half over if the scoring doesn't pick up the last few minutes of this half. Neither team shooting the ball well from three. Portland 33%, and then Utah way under their season average at 30, right? Under 30 at 29.5. So I'd be inclined to look at an in-game over here. Let's see if we can get a slow slog to the finish these last 3.5 minutes of the first half, though, and then see what those halftime.
So 1-point lead for the Blazers at this moment in time. The Clippers have extended their lead to 6 at a media timeout there in Los Angeles against the Phoenix Suns. And I don't remember if I said it out loud, but the one player prop that I liked, I circled it. I have proof that I did circle it here, Jeff. There's I did proof. Like Paul George over 22.5. He's, you know, he was red hot in their last game at 30 plus. It just feels like he's getting it going here a bit for the Clips. He has 15 points, 3 threes so far in this game. Kawhi Leonard just 2 points, 1 assist, 1 rebound, but a 6-point lead right now for the Clippers over the Phoenix Suns. And I think both you and I, you looked at that tantalizing plus number on Phoenix. You said, seems a little too good to be true. We'll see how this game plays out. It's the NBA. There's, you know, we're not even halfway through it. But so far, the Clippers with that 6-point lead.
A little bit of an alarming start for Phoenix because they're shooting 56% and we're down as much as 10 in this game. So they did cut it back to 6. But again, if you're shooting 56% against the Clippers and you're still losing the game, that is not a particularly good start. But this box score, like you said, is bizarre because Paul George is 15. Kawhi only has 2. The leading scorer for the Phoenix Suns right now is DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, and Cam Johnson all with 6. No one's really done anything in volume for Phoenix so far.
Yeah, Ayton, the big boys, obviously Devin Booker went off and Chris Paul had a big performance. Ayton also last night went over his point total in the victory over the Utah Jazz. A game that we've been monitoring a little bit here. That's the Bucks and the Mavs, and the Mavs currently in the 7th spot certainly have a chance, Jeff, to make some hay here against the with the Lakers in the standings to try to get to that 6th spot, avoid the play-in situation. They have gone on a little bit of a run here in the 4th quarter. Remember, no Giannis. They went off as a 2.5-point favorite. They have now taken the lead over the Bucks, leading 95-93.
Yeah, and we were talking about it during the break. You have to get Milwaukee while Giannis is not playing, especially for a team that is, again, trying to catch either Portland or the Lakers if the Lakers continue to fall down the standings in the Western Conference to get out of that play-in game. 97-95 with under 2 minutes to go now in Dallas, and it has been a big Luka game. Not much of a shock there. Luka has 24-9-8, and Porzingis is 23-15. So big night for the two stars.
Yeah, and I just want to throw in one baseball score because it is stunning what is happening with this franchise right now. The Oakland A's, folks, are just dreadful. Now this is a homestand, right? They open the season all home games. Mm-hmm. They're in Houston tonight. They're down 6-0, bottom of the 8th. And yet another poor starting performance tonight as Cole Irvin was on the hill. He gave up 4 runs in 5 1/3. The A's are looking like they're going to be 1-7 to start the year.
Well, the only positive is you could say they played Houston and the Dodgers, but they look like the worst team in baseball so far.
They have looked absolutely awful. It is the Nightcap. Jeff Parles, Tim Murray. Let's get the hour 2 number rolling. We keep it rolling on the nightcap, live from our Circa studios at the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Jeff Parles to my left, Tim Murray with you, and a gentleman who is located, I don't know if he's still at the office or behind the book. He might be back home, but on normal days, he's just hanging out down the road from us, down at the Golden Nugget. That is Tony Miller at GollumLV is where you can find him on Twitter. Tony, how was Monday for you guys? Haven't checked in with you since the national championship. How was the handle, and was it a good result that Baylor takes care of business?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Yeah, that was a good result for us. You know, all year long, I stayed low on Gonzaga and Baylor being the top two favorites, and I had real short prices on both those teams most of the year, so I didn't get hit very big on either one of those, and turned out good. Good result for us.
Well, obviously, one of the best weeks of the year, Tony. The Masters obviously got rolling today. Where are you guys sitting at after round one completed today?
Well, guys, let me tell you this. You know, if we could have had just a few more months to get a whole year of Masters bets, it would have broke all records because I mean, it was off the charts as far as handle went, and especially the last 2 weeks. It was really, really good. We got action on all the golfers, and you know, there's a few bombs out there that we have. We don't want Morikawa. We definitely don't want Spieth. The public was all over him. But we're looking pretty good, and the matchups look good, and everything's going well so far.
What was the peak of Jordan Spieth for you guys, Tony? Because I know some spots around town were as high as 60 in the futures book for the Masters. Do you remember how high you guys were on Spieth?
I do. We were at 80 at one
Ooh,
time.
Oh boy!
And yeah, well, he just was not playing well, and I don't know what happened, but he woke up and he started hitting the ball very, very well. And he came down real, real fast. He started playing really good golf. And last week was the culmination when he won in Texas, and the public kept playing him. And even today, when we put the Masters back up, he's still one of the favorites.
Yeah, most spots in town have him second. And is that where you guys have him?
Yeah. He's second with us, of course. You know, Justin Rose is the favorite. But we'll see what happens with him because I think he's one of the first ones off tomorrow at 6:30 in the morning.
And where were you guys on Justin Rose, and what were the bets? We were just talking to Wes Reynolds about Justin Rose, and you know, we've been joking that, you know, all of us now own have those 124-1 or wherever it was tickets in our pockets. It's wishful thinking, and you know what Wes was saying is, look, this is a guy that he didn't play in the Players, was dealing with a little bit of a back injury, so it's certainly a surprise to many to see him come out and shoot 7-under, and as Jeff has alluded to, maybe one of the best stretches of 10 holes we've ever seen in Masters history going 9-under. So where were you guys on Justin Rose, and how would you fare if he ends up going wire-to-wire, which is usually unlikely down in Augusta?
You know, with Justin Rose not playing very well this year and with the back issues, I believe we had him up around 100-1 at one point. And, you know, he came out on fire, man. He looked so different from the rest of the field today, and you know, he's swinging the club well. But again, let's see how he plays when he's one of those early guys tomorrow morning in that little bit different kind of weather in Augusta.
Tony, we'll keep it with the Masters for at least one more question here. Just obviously, you brought up who would be who would not be good for you guys. But as this tournament goes along, do you usually get hit with money on the JTs, the DJs of the world, and would that be the only exposure you guys would see from mid-tournament plays from the public and the sharps there?
You know, the favorites always come into play a little bit. The general public is all over them, you know. But I get mostly, you know, I got people shooting BBs at the moon with the long shots, and they play them quite a bit. But you're right, though. I do get a lot of play on DJ because, you know, he won it last year, and everyone knows about Bryson, and they play him because of his long ball. But there's few other guys they play quite a bit, like Rory's another one. He's a fan favorite, and look how he started out today. And of course, Tony Finau and Morikawa got a lot of action with me too, and he's one of the guys that I get my butt beat on. Him, Spieth, and Ryan Palmer.
Now Morikawa is obviously, he had a great year last year, but does it play into it, Tony, that he is a local guy? You know, he lives here in Las Vegas. Does that play into the handle at all?
It might with the locals on the phone apps, you know, but right. Downtown Nugget, I do get a lot of tourist play walking through, and you know, they they just play him, you know, because he's such a good putter. And mm-hmm. I think the guys that know golf knows how he putts, and that comes into play big at Augusta. So he's gotten a lot of play with tourists, and, of course, a lot of phone apps with the locals.
Tony, shifting over to baseball, 1 week in, how's the action been over at your shop, and how many nights when the Dodgers have played, did you guys needed their opponent to win or cover the run line?
Yeah, the first five, the run line, and we need the unders. I've been shading the Dodgers, and they still play them. You know, they're always the last team in my parlay, and you know, that's the Dodgers. They're going to play them. They're a good team and prolific offense, and you know, they're doing very well. They're going to have the public all over them, no matter if the number's -2, -250, -$3. They're still going to be in every parlay on the board.
Talking to Tony Miller over at the Golden Nugget, it's unbelievable. What did you guys end up going off with win total? I know it was kind of around 103, 104 in different spots. What did you guys close at?
You know, I'll be honest with you, we never put them up.
Oh, okay.
The reason being, this whole COVID situation, I just wasn't sure. I was going to put them up and, you know, shade the wins down to like 157 wins or, you know, use that as a key as far as, you know, how many games they would have to play. But I just backed off. Because of the whole COVID situation, I just didn't want to go through the mess like I went through with the Masters refunds because of COVID and things like that. And, man, it was tough. And so I just backed off that particular bet this year.
Tony, then what about the futures book now? Where are the Dodgers at right now at your shop, and where has the action been so far? Again, only a week in, but obviously everyone loves betting those futures markets during the offseason.
Oh, yeah, they're all over the Dodgers. Of course, they're the big favorite. But, you know, besides the Dodgers, you know, I got hit pretty big on the Padres. Those two teams out in the National League West are my two biggest deficits right now, And being a Houston-based house, because our headquarters are in Houston, I got a lot of play on the Astros. And the way the Astros have started the season is already starting to scare me. So those three teams I'm going to lose quite a bit on. And I'll imagine I get continued play on them the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Houston Astros right now. We were just mentioning it against Oakland. They're up 6-0. In the ninth, Oakland has been a disaster to start the season. As we chat with Tony Miller over at the Golden Nugget, yeah, this week, Tony, you know, overall with the Final Four, you know, dating back to Saturday, then you get the championship game. I'm sure you had some tourist action before maybe leaving town. They pick up a couple Masters tickets. Overall, how has this week gone? And I know the ratings and handle, I'm not sure if they usually correlate, but ratings were huge on Monday. How was going back to Monday, and then I guess incorporating what you're seeing for the Masters, how has handle and business been this week?
It's like it's almost back to normal as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of play. It started with the NASCAR race in Vegas going into March Madness, and then baseball started, and Augusta's here, and, you know, it's just been great. NBA season's going very well. The Vegas Knights are in the play, and with Circa opening up, Circa's been a big help for us, you know. They got a great book, a great property. Derek does a great job over there, and because of that, we get a lot of overflow. Bar handle's been going very well. Every night, we got a pretty packed book in there, and especially on the weekend. So I'm very happy with the handle in all ways right now.
Tony, you mentioned the NBA action. We had a discussion earlier in the show about the Phoenix Suns and how they're still right now at most spots the fifth favorite to come out of the Western Conference. With them sitting in second in the West right now, have you seen any extra action on Phoenix in your book, or is it just still solely the Lakers and the Clippers?
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, it was all Lakers and Clippers. And you know, now it's shifted. Now it's going to the Suns, and it's going to the Jazz. And it's like there's a new boy in town, and they're starting to get onto it, you know. But again, you know, the Lakers have had a lot of injuries, but the Suns, they're young guns. They're up and coming, and people like that. And they like a different team. And Phoenix hasn't been around in a while, so they're going to get some play. You know, they're like a Cinderella team. And I wouldn't mind seeing them come out of the West and play somebody from, you know, good from the East, but it'd be fun. But the Lakers are the Lakers, and if they get together and AD gets back on the court fully healthy, then they're going to be a team to contend with. So I'm not counting out the Lakers.
And then what about in the Eastern Conference with the Nets just dominating the way that they are? I got to imagine people are just firing away like they've already hoisted the Eastern Conference trophy there in Brooklyn.
Man, when they got Harden, and then they pick up Griffin, and then they get LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, they keep adding these guys, their bench is deep, and if Durant and Harden ever get on the court together, you know, they're unstoppable. They will be, but we'll see what happens. The NBA is a different kind of guy, and, you know, anybody can get upset in the East if the Sixers come out and play hard, or you know, if somebody comes around like the Bucks, why not come step up to them? We'll see. It's going to be fun to watch. I know it's going to be a good playoffs.
Tony, of course, hockey still going as well. Futures book for you guys, obviously, always in town. The Golden Knights get hit. But is there anyone else that's getting hit right now at your book, especially with the Avalanche starting to figure their stuff out again?
You know, it's funny. Over the years, the Golden Nugget seems to get a lot of play from people in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and they love their hockey up there. So I get hit all the time on wild futures and wild games and whatnot. So I got some good liability with the Wild. They do play the Avalanche because they're a good team. They like playing the favorites. And, of course, they play the Knights. The locals do. So, but let me tell you, the Rangers are starting to get a lot of play out of the East, even the Maple Leafs. And so we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be, again, a good Stanley Cup final. And I just hope the Vegas Knights can hang in there and bring one home.
He is Tony Miller, one of the best in the biz. Always love picking his brain over at the Golden Nugget, the sportsbook director there. Tony, great stuff as always. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on tonight.
There he is, Tony Miller from the Golden Nugget. And I always remember that, you know, they're a Houston-based shop, but I don't believe down in Houston you could bet on the Rockets, because it's always fascinating to hear about, you know, local shops and when the public ultimately turns on them, right? Because you fire on your team until they are not, and then they're losing, and then you're like, I'm going to fade you. So with this Rockets just disastrous of a season, at what point does it flip? But I don't think it happens down there at the Golden Nugget. Speaking of the Rockets, I thought they were in action tonight. They are not. But we do have Detroit at the half. The Red Hot Pistons up, slow them down, up 18 at the half against the Sacramento Kings. As the Kings went off as 8-point favorites here at Circa. Portland up 56-53 at the half. So you still intrigued by the second half there?
Not really, because
114.
That's a lot in the Utah game. It just you're asking now to get to 223 again. It is Portland's defense, so anything can happen there. But I would actually be more inclined to take Utah minus two in game, so laying five in the second half.
Yep.
That would be what I would be more inclined to do in that spot.
Okay. So and we had just gotten to the half. Couple numbers popping here as Phoenix, Jeff, got hot down the stretch there and ended up taking the lead at the half, 52-54. So you have the live line from DraftKings. We haven't had the live line here at Circa Pop just yet, but 56-54 at the half. So the Phoenix Suns get hot there at the end and end up taking the lead into the break, outscoring the Clips by six in the second quarter. Chris Paul finishes with 6 points, and Mikal Bridges actually leading the Suns in scoring tonight with 12, and Devin Booker with 11.
This is a weird box score,
yeah,
because both teams are shooting the lights out, and you only have 110 points because there's just not a lot of possessions,
yeah,
in this game. And I know during the NCAA tournament, we talked about limiting possessions a lot. Obviously, opponents against Baylor tried to do that. It didn't work for Villanova. It didn't work for Houston in the national semifinal. But look, this is one of those where second half total under, when you have teams shooting 65% and 50% from the field in the first half, and it's just a low possession game, there may not be enough possessions to get this game over in the second half. So I'd look to a second half under. But again, as we saw last night, you get overtime, you're probably losing.
Clips now minus three for the game, minus five second half against the Phoenix Suns. They were pre-flop laying six.
Yeah.
So a little bit, if you like the Clippers, a little bit of a value off the early number, but, you know, not a ton, as the Clips, once again, minus five in the second half against the Phoenix Suns, went off laying six in this game, 56-54, and Portland 56-53 over Utah at this point in time. Just an update on some of those player props that we always keep a close eye on. Paul George, my guy, 18 points in the first half, so getting close to his over for the game at 22.5. He went 7 for 11, 4 of 5 from 3. Paul George playing quite well. Kawhi Leonard, 8 points in the first half.
On the Utah game, the Rudy Gobert, 12.5 rebounds over. We need 2 in the second half. He had 11 in the first half. So
your call is a little better than mine.
We're looking okay there.
And I'm still mad. I think I just circled it. I don't think I said it out loud. By the way, updating you on the Bucks and Mavericks. The Bucks folks had the lead going into the fourth quarter, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
They have been outscored by 20 in the fourth quarter. The Mavericks now up 116-100. So not only are they going to get the win, they're going to get the cover with ease, despite trailing by 4 going into the fourth quarter.
This is 2 straight games without Giannis in this Western swing for Milwaukee. They had a 7-point lead going to the fourth against Golden State the other night. Blew the game. Now, 4-point lead going to the fourth and get walloped against Dallas.
Yeah, I had the Bucks that night in the money line parlay before the Giannis news came out. I'm like, oh, great. And then they blew the lead, lost by 1. Not even going to be a contest here. 16-point lead for the Mavericks. More to come on the other side, and we'll get a little baseball a little bit later on in this hour. It's the Nightcap. Life's a marathon, not a sprint, unless you're hiring. Fortunately, Indeed has great tools that help speed up the hiring process. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Tim Murray, Jeff Parles hanging out for the next couple of nights here on the Nightcap here on VSiN live from our Circus studios. Get a little NFL draft talk a little bit later on in this hour. Talk some wide receivers. I'll tell you, Jeff, we were talking in the break about, you know, things we bet last summer. I love the NFL draft. I've always loved the NFL draft. My friends in college used to make fun of me. That was, you know, when it was a Saturday, Sunday, and the first round took like 7 hours. But I would sit there and I would watch everything. And now that we can bet on it and the offerings last year, you know, when we had no sports, it was the first. I mean, I sat there on Thursday and Friday and Saturday as if it were a real sporting event, had beers, just chilling out. I mean, it was unbelievable. And, I'm thrilled about this year, and you're starting to get the more offerings out here in Las Vegas, so I will certainly be firing away on quite a bit of NFL draft plays.
Yeah, the last year's draft, the first bet I had made post-shutdown actually was Mekhi Becton to go to the Jets, and that actually worked.
There you go.
And then I was quickly thinking, oh, yeah, wait a second, I said this was hard the previous few months, and then, of course, reality hits you in the face, but it was, again, hopefully we never go in a circumstance like we were this past year ever again. But I was with you 100% of the way last year. Had the beers all ready to go. Had the burgers on the grill. It was perfect.
So it'll be fun this year. And we'll get to, I think we're going to talk a little wide receivers later bit in the hour and how many will go in the first round. Obviously, quarterbacks have dominated discussion. We talked a little bit about defensive props yesterday and the more these mocks come out and the way the wind is blowing, we'll see how things ultimately unfold. I'm still fascinated about the number 3 pick and who ultimately lands there because, you know, you see the Dane Brugglers of the world. You know, I'm always a big fan of what he does now at The Athletic. He has Mac Jones rated 25th. He has him as a first, second rate. And to think that he's going 3. I think it was Peter Schrager, who's just really, I wouldn't consider him a draft analyst by any stretch of the imagination, but he's always well piped in there with, the NFL morning show and him on with Fox too. And he has Mac Jones going 3 in his most recent mock. And it was, I don't get it. I'm paraphrasing. I don't get it, but this is what I've been hearing. Or maybe it's just a big smokescreen. Maybe I'm in the minority. I think it's a big smokescreen, Jeff. I don't trade up 9 spots to get Mac Jones.
Oh, look, I agree with that. I am not trading all that capital that San Francisco had to give up to move to 3 to take Mac Jones. I would do it to take Justin Fields. I don't know.
I would hopefully, I hope it is. Plus 260. Let's go.
Look, in all honesty, the Jets are going to take Zach Wilson at 2. I don't think Zach Wilson is worth the second pick in the draft. I think Justin Fields is worth that second pick as well. But look, it's, again, Peter Schrager is usually right.
It's very well piped in.
And he's very well piped in I would imagine that Shanahan is one of his guys. So it's one of those where, all right, Schrager's saying it, even with that great number on Fields right now that you're seeing, I wouldn't gravitate away from it right now.
And the whole, you know, Kyle Shanahan went to the pro day for Mac Jones. Well, Justin Fields is not going to have another pro day.
Yes.
Kyle Shanahan's going to go to that pro day. So I think that was all big, much to do about nothing. I would say this, if it ultimately is Trey Lance, I would not be that surprised because of the high upside of Trey Lance, right? You see these coaches, these quarterback gurus, so to speak, the intrigue of Trey Lance, the untapped potential, mm-hmm. the big body, big arm, that I would get. The Mac Jones, I'm not saying he stinks. I feel like when we look at players in these circumstances, one guy's great, one guy stinks. Mac Jones had a tremendous season this year, was the Heisman front runner for most of the season. I just don't understand why you would trade 2 future firsts and a 3rd to lock in Mac Jones.
I agree with you. On Lance, I don't know what Trey Lance is.
That's what I'm saying.
I have no idea what Trey Lance is.
Is it? I think it's that intrigue. And if he were selected 3, I think we would all say, well, they must see something.
100%. And look, Kyle Shanahan nearly won a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo.
He's still there, by the way.
He's still there. So
you know, Jimmy G is the quarterback whisperer for Trey Lance this year. I'm hoping it's Justin Fields. Both Aaron Oster, our producer, and me went in plus 260 on Justin Fields to go number 2. So that would be a nice little payday later on this month. More draft talk in 15 minutes. But up next, there was a finish today in Major League Baseball that you wouldn't believe. We'll discuss that next here on the Nightcap. The sports betting action this spring doesn't get much better than this week. Our VSiN experts are covering the Masters, early season baseball trend, NHL and NBA playoff races, every game on the schedule to give you the betting edge. We give you all the tools to cash more tickets, including our 24/7 video coverage, complete data and analysis on VSiN.com, our daily members only, best bet emails, and in-depth coverage of every sport in Point Spread Weekly. The weather and the betting action is warming up this spring, and now is the time to sign up for your VSiN 10-day free trial at VSiN.com/subscribe. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. Jeff Parles hanging out for the next couple of days. We'll talk to JVT top of the hour. We'll get an update on some of his thoughts on the win totals for the year and all that fun stuff that we talk about with JVT. The Phoenix Suns right now up 3 early third quarter on the Los Angeles Clippers. Up 5 as Devin Booker takes it to the hole. Tie game between the Blazers and the Jazz. Earlier today, and you are a Mets fan, correct?
I am, yes.
Okay. Earlier today, the Mets were hosting the Miami Marlins. And they're down 2-1 going into the ninth. Do you want to set the stage? Do you want me to do it? Do you want to set up the Mets fan here?
I guess I can take the reins here.
All right,
Tim.
Take the reins for us.
So Jeff McNeil on his birthday, who improperly was batting in the 7 hole anyway, launches a no doubt home run off of Anthony Bass to tie things at 2. A few batters later, McCann grounds out, infield hit Guillorme, double down the line because the Marlins were not guarding the line for Brandon Nimmo, intentionally walked Lindor to set up for Michael Conforto, who's 0 for his last 9 going into that plate appearance, gets to 2 strikes, and then everything breaks loose. Michael Conforto gets an off-speed pitch, does the little chicken wing with his right arm. The home plate umpire was about to punch him out.
Ring him up.
Was legitimately about to punch him out, and then went, no, hit by pitch, take your base, game over, Mets win 3-2.
You see on the screen there, the Marlins tweet, okay. And here's the thing, just to clear things up. If a batter is hit and the ball's deemed a strike, the umpire has the right to call it a strike.
Correct.
So when the umpire was that ready to ring him up, which he was, and then says, no, hit him, I give the crew on SNY a ton of credit.
Yes.
Because they told it how it was. SNY is where Mets games are played in the New York area. Mm-hmm. It's what, Howie Rose?
It's Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, Ron Darling, Howie's still on the radio.
Right, that's right. He's on the radio. But yeah, they were, you know, excited for a moment, and they kind of looked back and said, that shouldn't happen.
No, and look, it was...
And you had a bet on this.
I took the Mets in game. And also, too, being a Met fan, usually this is the way the Mets lose games. Right. I don't remember the Mets winning a game in this obscene fashion. Something like this, like a walk-off wild pitch, a walk-off hit batsman that should have been strike 3. But look, it's one of those two. And Ron Culpa was the home plate umpire who had a pretty mediocre day, to put it nicely, to begin with. And after the game, I got to give him credit. He was like, "Yeah, I missed the call.
Okay,
it was a strike, and I should have called him out." And he moved his arm in. I should have called him out. And again, it doesn't make Marlins backers or the Marlins feel any better. Even though DraftKings did one of those bad refunds on this, and good on DraftKings to do that. But Tim, it was one of the more bizarre things I've ever seen. I don't remember ever seeing that end a game like. Of course, you being a DC guy, Jose Tabata rings a bell in a scenario like this, breaking up the perfecto for Scherzer a few years ago.
I was listening to that on the radio. That was something.
So, but again, it just totally bizarre fashion. And in an NL East that the Marlins, of course, they made the playoffs last year. They're not a real threat this year. But for the Mets, for the Braves, who are off to a slow start, the Nats, who have barely played any games so far, and the Phillies, who are off to a great start right now, every game is going to matter here, potentially, in this NL East race. And for the Mets to get a ginormous break like that only helps them down the road. And if the Mets make the playoffs by a game over someone or have a game 163 in Citi Field as opposed to somewhere else, could be looking back at a game here in the first week of April and be like, oh, yeah, the Conforto chicken wing got it done.
What I mean, I'm so fascinated. I'm thinking New York radio right now. It's like, hey, you got to do what you got to do. Conforto's, he's 0-9. He's a bum to start the year. You got to stick your elbow in there. You got to do it. You know, whatever needs to be done.
It's probably a mixed bag because then you have
a bunch of cheetahs.
Yeah. No,
the Yankee fans, too.
Exactly. And it's funny because, and you brought up a really good point about the broadcast crew on this and why. There were a lot of broadcast crews across the country that would have said, oh, that was a heady play by Conforto to stick his 100%. Elbow in there to win the game. Anything to win a game. But look, this division, and Tim, you've been around this division a long time as well. This is going to be the most competitive I can remember this division being with the depth that it has. And every game does matter. So look, good for the Mets that they won this game. Good for my wallet because I won an in-play bet. But look, it's just one of those endings that is like, that shouldn't have happened the way it did.
You'll take it. Yeah. You'll take it as a Mets fan. I would say Marlins fans are upset, but there aren't
about
any.
About 6 of them.
Yeah, there aren't any. But speaking of this NL East, it has gotten off to a relatively slow start with the Nats dealing with the COVID issues that they had, didn't play until this week. They're 1-2. And by the way, take a look at the Nats schedule here. They're at the Dodgers. Then I believe they're at the Astros. And I want to say they return, looking at the schedule right now for the Nats. I don't know why the second half came up. But it's Dodgers,
then the Cardinals.
Diamondbacks, Cardinals, Mets, and then Blue Jays. So a challenging start to the season. But we only have one team over 500. The odds at BetMGM have shifted a little bit from opening day. Phillies were 11-2, plus 550. Now they're 5-1. Mets have not really shifted a little bit in their favor to plus 140. Braves have actually shifted from plus 135 to plus 150. Nats have stayed the same at 60 at plus 600. We're a week in.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going off changing any of your preseason projections on the NL East?
No, because if anything, I would bet Atlanta.
Me too.
I would bet the Braves, because that should not go from plus 135 to plus 150 off six games. The Braves still have a great lineup. Their starting pitching's pretty good. I still like their bullpen better than any bullpen unit in this division. So Atlanta plus 150, getting 15 cents better than you did on opening day. I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
I might be intrigued because I'm on the Braves, as much as it pains me as a Nats fan. 16-1 to win the World Series. Yeah. Let's go. Let's go, Braves. How many wide receivers will we see drafted in a couple Thursdays from now? We'll discuss a little NFL draft prop next right here on the Nightcap. On this week's Ron Flatter Racing Pod, I don't have the read, so I'm going to go right off of the script we have here. We'll be previewing the Arkansas Derby, the last major prep for the Kentucky Derby. We'll hear from Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert as he discusses concert tour, and Mike Bruckner from the Las Vegas Review Journal, and Johnny Avello from DraftKings. The Ron Flatter Racing Pod is available now at VSiN.com/podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts, and it is sponsored by FirstBet. I have a whole plethora of reads here that I like to keep, and this was an old one, so I didn't want to read that. So I was sharp enough to know that it wasn't this week's Ron Flatter Racing Pod, but that one is. That read right there. New one up. Check it out. Got the Arkansas Derby coming up. Jeff Parles in the house. Clippers up on the Suns right now, 70-69. Trailed by two at the break. We're a 5-point second half favorite. And the Utah Jazz now pulling away from the Portland Trail Blazers, up 81-72 with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter. Utah went off as a 5.5-point favorite over the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell's up to 28 now. Woo. So back-to-back, just ginormous days for Don Mitchell. And again, you mentioned it before, best record in the NBA for the Utah Jazz, and Donovan Mitchell is nowhere to be found in the MVP race.
Not even discussed. And his brother, Davion, not surprising, did declare for the draft today, so he will be headed to the NBA, but Baylor, I think they'll be just fine. They got some talent returning next year for the Baylor Bears. I've been kind of scouring the market a little bit, Jeff, early on in the futures market for college hoops next year. So Baylor, they're not going anywhere. They'll be good. I don't know if they'll repeat as champs, but they're going to be just fine down there in Waco, as will the team that they beat. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine.
They'll be fine, too. Even though everyone thinks they stink now, overrated, blah, 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 there's a reason they're the favorite to win the national championship.
Well, they're just bad now because they lost one game and only won 36 in a row before that.
I love when I hear there's a couple coaches that I, you know, text with every once in a while. Not anything related to gambling. I'm just, you know, catching up with them. And I love when, you know, you always hear it's like, oh, yeah, I never liked Gonzaga. Really? Come on. And I, to be honest, and not to go down this rabbit hole, but like, look, the USC game, I think, emphasized, oh, this team isn't messing around. They beat Creighton. You beat Oklahoma without their second leading scorer. Fine. But when they smashed USC and I had USC, as I have told people. I did have Gonzaga coming out of the region, so I was trying for a middle right there. But I really liked USC, the matchup, and they hammered him. And Drew Timmy looked tremendous. And then Drew Timmy was, like, unplayable against Baylor.
Well, that was the one thing that stood out to me the most on Monday night was the speed difference, which I guess because Baylor was playing in the Big 12 the whole year, and the Big 12 has elite speed, that it, again, you knew they had great speed, but it was jarring on Monday night, the difference in speed, foot speed, just regular foot speed between the two teams. And like you said, Timmy was unplayable. And in all honesty, Tim, the guy whose draft stock to me has plummeted with this tournament was Corey Kispert. Who was a lottery pick going into Monday night. If you're taking Corey Kispert in the NBA draft with a lottery pick, what are we doing here? He can't really defend.
No.
He's slow. He's a good shooter. I understand that, but
didn't show in the tournament either.
You can't take that guy in a lottery.
And I would say this, because I played over Kispert threes and over points in the championship game, because I felt like he's going to have a big moment
at some
here.
Point, yeah.
And, you know, he hit two threes, so he falls under 2.5, and he had finished with 12 points or whatever. But as that game went on, he looked scared. He looked like he was, you know, in a deer in headlights. So I totally agree, and I think that's been a sentiment shared a lot of places, that Corey Kispert, you know, West Coast Player of the Year, first-team All-American, just didn't have a showing. And on the biggest stage, he looked intimidated.
Yeah, he was bad on Monday night. He really wasn't that good at all during this tournament. No. Unlike Timmy, who obviously, like you said, the USC game, Evan Mobley's the best interior defender in the country. And
ate him for lunch.
Timmy smashed him.
Ate him for lunch in that. And then
the UCLA
game, yeah. His footwork's so great. And if Timmy comes back, which I assume he'll be similar to Luka Garza in this regard. I'm not saying he shoots like Luka Garza, but he'll be one of the faces, if not the face, of college basketball next year. He's preseason player of the year. Everything is Drew Timmy. But transitioning from the hardwood to the gridiron, with the draft coming up at the end of the month, and yesterday we talked a little bit about some defensive props. I want to get into wide receivers. Now, I think we all know the big names, Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle, and we've got some over-unders on them. But when you look at wide receivers, total selected, over 4.5 is juiced to $1.62, under 4.5 is plus 127. Now, I think you could say with relative confidence that four wide receivers getting selected is a pretty much of a lock.
100%.
These three, and then Tony, Kadarius Coney out of Florida. Those guys are getting drafted in the first round, barring something crazy. I mean, they are getting drafted. Just to go on last year, which was thought of as one of the better wide receiver drafts we've had in a while, six went in the first round. 2019, four. Where you get into the gray area is who's that fifth wide receiver selected? Will he go in the first round? You have, you know, Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. Elijah Moore from Ole Miss has been getting some love.
You have Terrence Marshall out of LSU as well, who's been skyrocketing up the last few weeks.
So would you lay the price? Because we also know the trend of the NFL now. And once again, too, think about last year's draft. Last pick of the draft, Kansas City Chiefs, what do? They select a running back. Not in need, but out of, yeah, why not? We'll just add another weapon to our awesome offense. Tampa Bay could do that, right? I mean, couldn't you see them at 32? We have Tom Brady for only so many, you know, maybe two, maybe just one. Let's get him another weapon. Let's get him, yeah, Rashad Bateman. Let's get him, you know, some wide receiver there. Do you like the over? Would you lay the $1.62 price? Do you think it will continue to rise?
I would lay, because I think that's going to continue to rise. Just look at the teams that are picking in the back end of this of the first round, because those other four guys.
Well, the Packers refuse to give Aaron Rodgers up.
I'm not even considering Green Bay in this thing. Green Bay will probably actually. You know what?
Another quarterback.
Green Bay will take another quarterback. Exactly.
Davis Mills looks great.
But if you're just looking at the back end of that first round, though.
Ravens.
Baltimore
definitely
needs a wide receiver. Sammy Watkins is a nice player, Hollywood Brown, again, is still one of the more infuriating players for me to watch in an NFL game. You need a wide receiver to help Lamar Jackson out. And there are plenty of good players, like you mentioned. I would take Elijah Moore, personally, if I was Baltimore there at 27. And what's stopping New Orleans from taking a wide receiver?
I thought that New Orleans, before the Mac train started here, thought maybe Mac Jones at 28, maybe they move up to go get him. Now the price is just going to be so crazy high to go get a quarterback. And after Mac Jones, there is thought to be a really wide gap, right, between Davis, you know, whoever you think is sixth, Kellen Mond, Davis Mills, whoever it is, Kyle Trask. But I think the way that things have trended in recent years in the NFL, getting a wide receiver makes a lot of sense. And even though that particular player may not be jumping off the page at you, like I mentioned, I mean, I'm just looking at, you know, different rankings here. You know, you could see, you know, Rashad Bateman name I mentioned.
Elijah Moore at Ole Miss. There are guys that are
Rondell Moore, who's a smaller guy, but
his injury history probably pushes him to the second round.
I mean, I think back last year, and once again, six wide receivers taken, and then second round, you still had Michael Pittman, was a high pick there for the Colts. I think as the mocks continue to come out, and the more you think about it, and the importance of having wide receivers, and especially cheap wide receivers, when you get them in the first round, you have control for them for 5 years without having to re-up. I ultimately think I agree with you. I think there will be a wide receiver selected outside of that four, that big four, in the first round.
I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas City actually even goes wide receiver 31.
Why not?
I mean, we've seen it from them. Again, Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 32 last year, no one saw that one coming. No way. And I know Kansas City has needs on the defensive side of the ball. They still need to remake their offensive line still. But they did lose Sammy Watkins, and Sammy Watkins was an underratedly important part of that offense over the last few years. And as high as they seem to be on Hardman, Mecole Hardman hasn't shown me that much as an NFL wide receiver. So if they took like a Tutu Atwell at 31, that wouldn't shock me.
I want to look at some of these over-unders on the wide receivers. Jamar Chase is over-under 6.5. And you have to lay juice for the under 6.5. But he's not going 1-3. Kyle Pitts right now is thought to be going 4. Just throwing it out there. Cincinnati and then Miami. I think Jamar Chase is gone by 6. I think he's the first wide receiver selected. So, you know, most mocks say Miami's going to get DeVonta Smith. They're getting DeVonta Smith because Jamar Chase is gone.
Right.
I think he is going in the top 6. I would lay the $1.34.
I 100% agree with you. I don't see how he gets past 6. I just don't. And again, Cincinnati, I would still take Sewell at number 5 if I were the Bengals.
I would too.
But taking Jamar Chase at 5, there's nothing wrong with that.
And there's a reason why 11.5 is the for Smith and Waddle, because Philadelphia, I think, is hoping to get a wide receiver.
They'll hopefully get one of them.
They
even
want one
they could
of those.
Have had either of them at the original slot.
2 hours in the books. Let's get a little NBA talk coming up top of the next hour. JVT, he will join us. It is the Nightcap.